off and on over the course of the next year. And so it's going to be looking at how people's lives are changed when they meet Jesus for the first time. And so for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking at a few of these stories, and then we're going to break into Easter. We're going to come back around to it over the course of the summer and then in the fall as well. And so we'd love for you to come and to be a part of the sermon series that we have going on if you're interested, and you would love to hear who Jesus is and why that matters. We don't always perceive what we think we perceive. We don't always see what we think we see. Sociological research shows that that's true, at least. Because everything comes filtered through our own experiences, our perspectives, our own views, the point of view at which we are looking at something. Just, we don't always perceive what is actually there. So this morning, I want to just test that out on us. I want to look at a series of pictures. You might have seen some of these before, but I want to see what is it that you see. Follow along with me this morning. Now let me ask, how many of you see a duck? We have any ducks in the room? All right, does anybody see a rabbit? All right, some rabbits. Okay, how many of you now see both, now that I mentioned both are there? All right, either one, actually, okay, there's the rabbit. You have to like turn your head and look at it funny, or it takes a minute. Let's go to our next one. What do you see? No one agreed. What's the problem here? All right, how many of you see a penguin? Absolutely. How many of you, in honor of President's Day, see Abraham Lincoln's face? All right, and how many of you now see both? All right, there we go. Let's do one more. What do we see here? How many of you see an old woman looking slightly sad? Absolutely. Kind of wearing that head shawl, kind of bowing her head. How many of you see a young woman looking away from the shot with the feather coming up out of her hat and beautiful necklace, wearing a fur coat? Okay. How many of you are just totally freaked out by everything that we're looking at this morning? That's okay too. All right. It's a perspective check. What is it that you see? We don't always see what we think we see. And there might be more there than meets the eye. Or I'm going to do something today. I'm going to divide my audience on us. I'm going to do something that might be a little bit controversial. I want to listen to this clip, and I want to hear what you hear. Okay.
Laurel. 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 Laurel.
Okay. How many of you hear Yanni? Yanni, excuse me. One. I have two, three, four, okay. Four out of a room of I don't know how many. All right, how many of you hear Laurel? The vast majority. The four of you, what's wrong with you? I only say that because I know you all. I love you all. All right, this is the viral phenomenon that took off back in May of 2018. It just blew up the internet for a couple of weeks. You see, a group of students had recorded the spoken word Laurel from vocabulary.com. But in their own little cohort, just that small group of students, they couldn't agree about what word they were hearing. Some of them heard Laurel, some of them heard Yanny, and they argued back and forth about which one was right. And so finally they just posted it online, because that's where we get all the right things that we need to know, right? And it just took off in a matter of hours, and then it just went everywhere. And people then divided over whether you were a Yannyist or a Laurelite. Okay, let's see, can anybody now hear Yanny? It'll play. I don't hear anything, so that's great. All right, we'll take it. Those viral things that happened, it's kind of like the incident now just called The Dress from about 3 or 4 years ago. It was either black, blue, or white, gold. I know which one it is. I don't know what it is that you see. But let me just tell you, the one thing I do know about this picture is that Megan and I argued about it for days as to what was actually here, right? Because we don't always perceive things the same way. We aren't often sure what's there. And because of that, disagreements and controversies can ensue. Our story today comes from the beginning of a series of controversies found in the Gospel of Mark. If you have a Bible, our story is found in the New Testament, the second half, in the second book, the Gospel of Mark. And if you're following along in an app or on your phone, that's awesome, please do that. If you don't have a Bible with you, but you would love to have one, there are Bibles in the lobby today. It looks just like this, with this orange cover. And we would love for you to run back and grab one if you want one, or take one with you when you go. That's our free gift to you. But if you grabbed one this morning, you can find that story on page 683. But Mark chapter 2 begins five controversial stories. Jesus has just begun his ministry, and he's attracting large crowds who come to hear him speak and watch the incredible miracles he performs. And these crowds include normal, everyday kind of working people from the area, as well as religious authorities and leaders who have traveled from a long way off to see whether or not the things that Jesus was teaching was right in their eyes. And the question on everyone in the minds and the crowd's mind that morning is this: who is this man? You see, they want to know who he is and what he can do and where he comes from. And so we have five stories today that highlight their questions and provide some controversial answers. Our first is found in the story we're going to look at in just a minute. It's Mark 2, 1 through 12, that tells the story of Jesus encountering a paralyzed man. The second, then, is a story in which Jesus meets a tax collector and then takes him and his friends to dinner and earns the ire of the religious leaders, who are angry that he's hanging out with all those sinner friends. Then the religious leaders become more upset because they notice that Jesus and his followers don't follow their traditions about ritual fasting. You see, they had decided what was right and religious, and Jesus didn't conform to their patterns. And then Jesus angers them even more because he and his disciples are out for a stroll on the Sabbath, and a couple of them just pick a head of wheat just to put between their teeth. It's not even going to do anything, but they say, how could this supposed holy man, this person that they all think has it all together, how can he break what is right about the Sabbath, our own rules about what you can and can't do? And then Jesus ups his game just one step farther. He takes all that and he heals a man on the Sabbath. Five controversies. They begin and they end with healings, but along the way, then Jesus angers the opponents time after time for ignoring their rules and their traditions that they had created and held dear. And in the final story, that final story is the last straw, because they decide with what Jesus has done, he deserves to die, and they plan to kill him. But that's later. And our story begins here in Mark chapter 2. I'm going to invite my friend Stephen to come up. Stephen's going to read this story for us as we listen, and then we'll move on through it.
I will be reading from the New International Version of Mark 2, 1 through 12. A few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home. They gathered in such large numbers that there was no room left, not even outside the door. And he preached the word to them. Now some men, bringing to him a paralyzed man, it was carried by four of them. Now since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus by digging through it, and then lowered the mat the man was lying on. Now when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, "Son, your sins are forgiven." Now some teachers of the law were sitting there, thinking to themselves, "Why does this fellow talk like that? He's blaspheming. Who can forgive sins but God alone?" Now immediately, Jesus knew in his spirit that this is what they were thinking in their hearts. And he said to them, "Why are you thinking things like this? Which is easier, to say to this paralyzed man, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or to say, 'Get up, take your mat, and walk'? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. And so he said to the man, I tell you, get up, take your mat, and go home. He got up, took his mat, and walked out in full view of them all. This amazed everyone. And they praised God, saying, we have never seen anything like this.
And as we encounter Jesus here, we find that he has come home. And we don't know if this is his house or one that belongs to his friends, but this is the place that he calls home. This is where his heart is, a place he might call sweet. Before this, he's been forced to stay outside of the city. One, because he is just so popular due to his teaching and the spreading fame of the miracles that he was working. But second, Jesus was forced to stay outside because a man with leprosy had come to him asking for help. And Jesus, rather than just healing him, reached down and touched him. And he provided the thing this man needed most at that moment. He made him whole and clean, yes, but he also gave him the human touch that had been denied for so long because of his disease. And that man was made whole and pure, but it also left Jesus ritually unclean and impure in the eyes of the people because they were afraid maybe he would have the disease too. And so he has had to wait outside the city until the appropriate amount of time to make sure he hasn't contracted the disease. But now, Jesus can come home. And as he arrives, word spreads, people gather, and it's standing room only. They are elbow to elbow. There is no space. The crowds have staked out their space to hear the rabbi speak. And Jesus begins to preach. Meanwhile, in the city, four friends hear that Jesus has come back to town. And they've heard what he can do. And a plan, an idea begins to form in their minds because they have this friend. Not much is known about the man. We don't know his name. We don't know his background, his history. If we were writing the story, we would want more details than Mark gives us, wouldn't we? All we know about this man is that he was paralyzed. But we want to know things like, was it an accident? Or was he born this way? Was this the result of some heroic act he performed? Or a workplace accident? Or maybe just some silly stunt gone wrong? We don't know his story. We simply know his present condition. He's paralyzed, and he lays on a mat. And those who saw him would fall into two camps in how they think about him. Some would look at him and then quickly look away out of what they might think of as respect, but often more like pity or shame. Other people might look at him and say, you know, that guy's got to be sinful because only bad things happen to bad people, right? And in their understanding, anyone who is paralyzed was judged by God and unclean too for their disability. Some would see him and label him, but he has four friends who know him and love him, and they're willing to go to great lengths for their friend. And we would all be blessed to have friends like these. Now, we don't know who suggested it or if they all came to this sudden conclusion simultaneously, but they run and they grab their friend's mat and they haul him to Jesus. And when they arrive, they notice that the place is packed. And so they start trying to gain entrance. Excuse me, pardon us, can you let us through, please? But it just doesn't work. And so they probably get a little bit bolder, a little more insistent. Hey, make a hole. And then they probably just try to muscle their way in. But it's just packed too tightly. But they believe that seeing Jesus is the only thing that's going to make a difference. So they climb on the roof. And they kneel down and they begin to use their hands to dig through the tightly packed dirt and thatch. And slowly, painstakingly, inch by inch, they begin to make a hole. And I want you to imagine that scene with me. Imagine being in the house. Because this scene is absolutely hilarious when you stop and think about it. I mean, here is Jesus trying to preach in the crowds who are trying to listen with all of that scraping going on overhead. We get frustrated, don't we, whenever somebody's opening the wrapper behind us and we're trying to listen in from time to time. Imagine somebody scraping a hole in the roof. And imagine, at this point, Jesus just has to stop teaching and look up and watch what's going on. Because here he is in this place he calls home, watching people rip a hole in the roof. And how would you feel? I mean, I get really angry when the dog down the street gets into my bags on trash day. And I can't imagine what I would think if somebody's ripping a hole in my roof while I'm sitting there. But rather than acting out of anger or frustration or indignation at their actions, I actually imagine Jesus here with a little bit of a smile, a slight smirk on his face. And then when the hole is big enough, they lower their friend down in front of Jesus. But guys, this isn't some little gap. This is a new skylight in Jesus' roof. And Jesus saw their faith. And the gospel's faith is often connected to healing. If you believe, if I could just touch the fringes of his robe, or Lord, I know that you can make me well again. But here it's the friend's faith that makes all the difference. And they had enough faith to tear the roof off the joint. And Jesus looks at the paralyzed man, and he really saw him. And he gave the man what he needed most. Son, your sins are forgiven. If we had looked at the man, we probably would have seen his condition. We might have assigned him a label. We might have even called him lame. Some in the crowd called him a sinner because of his condition. And they were actually partially right, because he was a sinner. And that's what Jesus chose to address first. I might have started with the presenting need, the symptoms, the obvious, the physical. Jesus starts with the soul, because Jesus saw the real need. And I want us to notice what Jesus does here. Jesus first names him, Son. We don't know his name, but Jesus calls him Son. Other gospels say, Friend. Jesus creates a relationship. Jesus befriends him. And then Jesus forgives him. Your sins are forgiven. And that's when the controversy begins. Now remember, they've all come trying to figure out who Jesus is and where he comes from and what he can do. And so the crowd is watching Jesus intently, but they all see something a little bit different. Some of them see a prophet at work. Some see a miracle worker. Others say he's Messiah. But the religious leaders see blasphemy. Who does he think he is? They begin to think and fume. Why did he go and say that? What's his problem? Doesn't he know only God alone can forgive sins? They had watched, but they couldn't see what was real. So Jesus calls them out. I know what you're thinking. What's easier, to say to this paralyzed man, your sins are forgiven, or take up your mat and go home? But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. So I tell you, take up your mat and go on home. And this man, who couldn't move on his own, stood up. And Mark's discussion here from this point on seems pretty clinical. He took up his mat and he walked out in full view of them all. That's not how this story goes down, right? Because you imagine this man standing up with shaky knees, because they haven't worked for a while and he doesn't have much muscle tone. And then he takes those first few haltering steps and he realizes everything works. And then I imagine him laughing with glee and hugging Jesus and jumping up and down and laughing and praising and getting all excited and clasping the hands of his neighbors in the crowd because he knows everybody in this small village. And then he runs outside to join his overjoyed friends as they laugh and are amazed and run home to talk about the amazing things they've just seen happen. And everybody who saw this was amazed, and they praised, and they exclaimed, "We have never seen anything like this." Lots of people had come to Jesus that day, all with different reasons, different agendas, different hopes, different expectations. The friends had come for a healing, and they saw a redemption and a healing too. The crowds had come to hear a message of forgiveness, and they saw a man forgiven. They had come to witness a miracle, and what an awesome one they got. The teachers had come to see what Jesus was all about, and they got an eyeful. Some saw what happened and praised. Some saw and believed. Some saw and cried blasphemy. Because some could see what was real, and others saw but couldn't really see. And Jesus, here's what I love from this story. Jesus could see the real need. And the next story that comes in Mark, he tells us it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. As Jesus looked at this man, he saw what he really needed that day, forgiveness. Not just a physical cure, but a spiritual one. Forgiveness of sins. He needed a doctor for the soul. And some of us might be wondering this morning, okay, but what is sin? And if that's your question, you are not alone. It's really hard for us to find. My own daughter asked me that question this week. And it's one that I wrestle with continuously because I want to be able to talk about it in a way that makes sense. And so our sermon next week is going to look at this idea more in depth. And we'd love for you to come back and join us next week as we talk about what is sin and how do we know it. But if you just can't wait till then, come down and catch up with me up front. We're going to have a question and answer time if you want to. Just anything that's on your mind or on your heart, you're welcome to meet me down here, stage left, and we can talk about it before lunch. But as Jesus looked at this man, he saw the real man. And he saw the real need. And Jesus gave forgiveness. Redemption. A new beginning, a fresh start, a clean slate. And healing too. Jesus saw what was real. Do we? I'm thankful you guys are with us this morning. And I'm not certain what brought you here. Maybe it was an invitation from a friend or a neighbor or a coworker. Maybe it was just a feeling that's been on your heart that you say, I just need to check this Jesus thing out. Or you decided to give church another try for the first time in a long time. Maybe you were just driving by and saw the signs and found yourself turning in for some reason and wandering in. Maybe it was the promise of free barbecue, and it smells really good, by the way. So I don't know what brought you here. Actually, I do think I know what brought you here. I actually think it was God. And as we read today's story and we encounter Jesus, maybe you saw something you hadn't seen before. Maybe you saw Jesus in a new way. Not as sullen and somber, but one who smiles and laughs with his friends. Maybe you heard a message of love for the first time in church rather than one of condemnation. Maybe you started wondering, there might be something more here I want to check out. Or maybe you saw yourself in a new way this morning. You see, throughout our lives, others might have labeled us in whatever ways that they do. But maybe you heard for the first time that God might love you and call you his friend or his child. Maybe you came with one purpose in mind today, only to discover there's a real need for Jesus in your life. Maybe this morning you saw that real need, the need for forgiveness. Forgiveness from sin, for a fresh start, a clean slate, a healing for your soul. Because honestly, that's true for each one of us. All of us have sinned. All of us have done things that we might regret. We've messed up, haven't we? We've fallen short. We've missed the mark. And some of us feel guilt and shame or fear. We might feel hopeless and helpless in the midst of that. All we can see is being stuck. We've got to see what's real. Because no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've come from or what label you've been given, the reality is that nobody can't be forgiven, can't be made whole. Anyone can experience God calling them child and friend. We call that grace. And that's what's real. A gift we don't deserve, and God gives it to us anyway. And if you need that grace to be made real in your life, then there's a couple of ways that you can move forward. In just a moment, we're going to stand up and sing. We call that our invitation time, because that's what it is. You are invited to take whatever the next step is for you. Maybe you want to come down front and I'll meet you here and we can talk or pray about anything on your heart or set up a time to study. We could even baptize you into Christ this morning. Or we have some of our staff and our elders and our deacons and their spouses who are going to be standing back in the lobby in just a minute. I'm going to invite them to go ahead and stand up and start making their way back. If you're not a person who wants to come down front, I get that. That's great. But you're welcome to go back to the back and meet with one of them if you just want to talk or pray. Or maybe you just have questions. Please come down afterwards and I'd love to sit and chat with you. Or we can set up a time in the upcoming week if that's better. But today, I want you to see what's real. Because there's real hope. There's real joy. There's real forgiveness. And it comes from encountering Jesus. There's a way we can bless you today. Feel free to respond in whatever way you want. I pray that you will encounter His grace this morning, the grace we're about to sing about. May God make that real in your heart and your life. Let's sing.